The first 100 days are up.
Coalition government has now completed as promised 49 actions we committed to in our 100-day plan.
The next about 900 are up and running with a boon for the base, a first tax cut for some.
Effectively reversing the previous government's policy so that mortgage interest will be a deductible expense for rental property. This is a major relief for renters and landlords alike.
But watered down, the tax break won't be backdated as promised, making this... Congratulations, the first broken promise from the coalition negotiations.
It's an acknowledgement of the fiscal situation that we've inherited, and where we're delivering our policy, we might make adjustments along the way. That's okay.
And it's still going to cost the government $800 million more than it budgeted for. Oops, someone get that finance minister a calculator.
How did you get your numbers so wrong on that interest deductibility?
Are we doing?
Well, they did actually. But the Prime Minister's insisting this isn't about giving landlords a tax break, it's all about the renters and putting downward pressure on skyrocketing rents.
If you are thinking about the renters of New Zealand, which is where I hope you might be thinking, they will be very grateful.
The Coalition's momentum also arrested by anger about a pay offer for police.
They've been ignored by successive governments and they've had enough. Farcical, demoralising, disgusting. An absolute joke. These are how these officers feel. They believe they've been taken advantage of.
Police Association President Chris Cahill comparing the government's offer for cops to the rebates on rentals.
Yesterday they decided to give landlords $3 billion worth of tax relief over the next 3 years. That's their choice. Well, they've also got a choice to look after police officers, and it's time to step up.
The PM pushed by staff on whether he can still make good on his promise to strengthen the thin blue line.
You promised to deliver an extra 500 police officers. Will that still happen?
We know it's tough, we know it's going to be hard, but we're going to continue to grow our police force.
Headlines from the other side of the house too. Surprise! Chloe Swarbrick confirmed as Greens co-leader.
Secondly, the bully boy behaviour of this government will only succeed if we let it. Even if the three men in charge have taken the opportunity to make a mockery of our democratic process these last few months.
Look out, Luxon. Watch out, Winston. Stay alert, Seymour. And Hipkins, hurry, look alive. She's taking your job as leader of the opposition, as evidenced when you started calling Christopher Luxon a dictator on NewsHub.
Winning an election does not entitle you to act like a dictatorship.
Yeah, sorry, Chippy. Sticks and stones.
No disrespect, but Chris Hipkins is a desperate individual, right?
I'm actually saddened by them because New Zealand and every democracy need a competent opposition.
Ouch. Kia ora Aotearoa. I'm Toba O'Brien. Welcome to the pod. Well, we had a whole podcast ready to go for you about wealth inequality and tax, and it was bloody interesting too. We had a good chat with a Dutch philosopher who's proposing we cap wealth, that there is such a thing as being too rich. It's a concept she's calling limitarianism, which she's written a book about. Then to get the countervailing view, we talked to libertarian David Seymour, who thinks the idea is nonsense and there is no such thing as being too rich. But then at the 11th hour, ta-da, all our Christmases came at once. We were finally granted an interview with the Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon. Followers of the pod will know we have been after that puppy for about 6 months now. So we have postponed the Wealth Pod. You can hear that next week. And actually, half the interview with David Seymour is already available on our feed as a shortcast. It's the bit where we talked about the government's current tax policies. The PM interview wasn't the usual 20-minute studio sit-down we'd been hoping for, but a 5-minute pull-aside at Central District Field Days in Fielding, which is where I have had the pleasure of spending the day, such a great event, and where I had the enormous pleasure of watching the Prime Minister of Aotearoa, New Zealand, absolutely blat it on a ride-on lawnmower.
And you were going for it.
Yeah, well, there's only one way to go, flat out. So it was, that's what you have to do. But man, it's a great experience. I've never done anything like that. Very, very fast lawnmowers. And yeah, incredible sport. Yeah.
At one point there was a bit of kickback.
There's no grass being mowed, from what I could see.
You didn't worry about coming a cropper?
No, just flat out, full on. That's the way I try and live my life, so that's what we've got to do driving too. So, and I don't get to drive that much, so I sort of drove it like it was stolen, I suspect, a little bit. But, it's really a great experience, really good fun. So, yeah. Yep, awesome.
After the PM on the pod, we'll get to our usual suspects, Andrea Vance on the winners and losers of the week, and Luke Malpass from the Labour Party caucus retreat. We'll talk to him about the future of Labour. But first, finally, here is the PM.
What did you have for breakfast?
I haven't had any breakfast, mate, and that's a real worry doing a Tova interview now without any food on board, but we'll give it a shot. The hypoglycemic index will be really low.
I've had three black coffees,
if I fall over,
no breakfast, so we're evenly matched, except I'm peeking out slightly.
So there you have it, the Prime Minister Christopher Luxon's first interview on the Tova podcast. We told you it wasn't as long as we'd hoped, but something is better than nothing. Just jokes. That was just the mic checks. Here's the interview.
Prime Minister Christopher Luxon, thank you so much for joining us and making time in your busy schedule
at
Central District Field Days on the stunning fielding day.
Yeah, pretty special. I mean, these days are really great for the agricultural community, as you know, and my message to them is I want them to be valued, not treated as villains. And we've got a lot of growth opportunity to go in agriculture, and they're doing it pretty tough at the moment with high interest rates. And so we're working hard to sort of make it better for them.
We've not got a lot of time, so let's get straight into it. Can we start on police? Will you give police any extra money to negotiate?
Yeah, look, we put forward an enhanced offer, you know, just recently. Obviously, this has been a negotiation that's been going on for some time with the previous government. The police and the police association will continue to negotiate in good faith. And from my point of view, it's important that they carry on those negotiations in that way. And importantly for me, it's making sure that we actually back police up with the right tools that they need to do the job.
So there is extra cash in there for police?
Well, we have put an enhanced offer on the table. And again, that'll be an issue for the police and police association to work through.
You pitched yourself as the party that was tough on crime. You want police to enforce your gang patch ban, to break up those gang gatherings. You're doing extra work for you, dangerous work. So will you pay them what they're worth?
Well, look, we really value our police. And I think the message we've sent them already is that, you know, this is a government that's going to back them up, that we are a law and order government. We do want to see a restoration of law and order in this country, and that does mean, you know, that actually we have done things already. You know, think about, you know, removing the government's, you know, 30% reduction ban, the gang laws that we're bringing through, the firearm prohibition.
Yeah, but they're talking about not enforcing those policies of yours because they're so pissed off about the offer.
I'll just say to you, look, you know, we're a new government that's inherited a negotiation from the former government. We've already put an enhanced offer on the table. The police and the police association will go through the negotiation process as they should and as they must, with goodwill on both sides. And so, you know, we will work hard at that, but we're also going to back police up by giving them the tools that they need.
Okay, their last public offer was even worse than Labour's offer. You had promised no cuts to the police front line. Your offer was an effective cut to money going to the police front line.
Oh, look, I disagree. What we know is we've got an enhanced offer on the table. Again, it's for police and the police association to work through a negotiation.
Okay, well, police are telling staff that they're angry, they're disillusioned, they feel unvalued, morale is rock bottom, and this is going to push officers over the edge. Are you okay with that and being part of your legacy?
Well, we want police to feel, you know, we're working really hard. I mean, you know, you've seen us do things like, yeah, we've got to make the country.
This is how they're feeling, Prime Minister.
No, I understand, and I talk to a lot of police officers, and I spend a lot of time with frontline police officers as well. So I also, you know, hear what they're saying. They want a government that's going to back them. That's what they're going to get.
They say they're going to leave. Do you know how many? Well, actually, are you still, yes or no, are you still committed to delivering 500 extra police in this
term?
Yeah,
we are. We know it's going to be tough. We know it's going to be difficult, but we're going to have a government with some ambition and aspiration and a clear goal that we're heading towards.
How many police have gone across the ditch under your watch?
Look, I mean, I don't have the numbers, you know, since the last 107 days we've been in power, but what I'd say
it's an important number to keep track of, right?
No, it is an important number, and we are tracking it, and certainly the police minister's aware of it and tracking it as well. What I'd say is there's a number of reasons often for why people are choosing to take an offer in Australia. The funding,
money, mostly.
Well, obviously, right?
And better conditions.
Correct.
And you're lowballing them on both of these things.
Well, no, but let's be clear. Also, Australia is a much wealthier country. You know, the average incomes in Australia are $20,000 more than they are in New Zealand's. Our job is to build a much stronger, better economy. And in doing that, we can better support our teachers and our nurses and our police officers, who we really care about and we want to do well. But let's face up to reality also, is that, you know, New Zealand has had a lost 6 years. And as a result, we've gone backwards economically.
Since December, 35 New Zealand police have applied to go to the Northern Territories alone. There are 8 who are about to graduate from the early December intake. So you should be keeping on top of these numbers, shouldn't you? Because that's going to stymie your efforts to deliver on that promise.
We know it's really tough. We've got retirements. We've got attrition. We want to see lower levels of attrition. We want to make sure that police know that they're going to be valued. In fairness, we need to let a pay negotiation carry on between police and the police association. And big picture wise, they need to know they've got a government that's going to back them.
Do you know how much a new trainee cop gets paid?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I imagine it's about the there's numbers in my head, but I'm not going to say what they are.
Do you want to have a stab at it?
Well, no, it depends on total employment costs. I remember thinking we're about $90,000.
$50,834. Yep. That's less than the accommodation allowance that you were drawing down to live in your own apartment in Wellington. Do you see why they're angry and why they're angry at you?
Well, I'd just say I think conflating those two issues is a bit unfair, as I've said.
Pool of money.
Yeah, but actually, we can talk about that at another time. But what I just say to you is we are working hard. It's a negotiation as they happen between the police and the police association. Let them go through their pay round. The negotiations will happen in good faith. But importantly, the police know that we are a government that's going to back them.
We've got to hustle through.
We're giving them tools and we're making sure that
You've made those points. Yep. It might also be hard for some of those police officers to see you giving landlords multi-billion-dollar tax breaks, but you have done that, albeit a watered down, congratulations, first broken promise of the coalition negotiations with the interest deductibility. Because you hadn't budgeted for it properly. So should we expect similar things with your tax cuts proper, that you miscalculated them, that they're going to be delayed?
Well, I just say conflating those two issues. Actually, what we're focused on with interest deductibility is making sure we lower the cost for renters. Police, nurses and teachers who actually rent their houses are going to benefit from that because rents have been going up
107%. Should we expect that your tax cuts... Yeah, I want to focus on the tax cuts, though, using that as a litmus test. So should we expect that your tax cuts will be watered down, delayed or miscalculated?
Well, we're working through all of our budget, as you know, for May. A big part of it is we are going to offer tax relief to lower middle-income New Zealanders. That's really important.
But it could be watered down or delayed.
No, I'm just saying to you, we're working our way through the budget. We are a government that is also dealing with a pretty deteriorating and dynamic set of economics. We're balancing all of that, but what we're going to do is make sure that we can actually get rid of the wasteful spending, we deliver better frontline services, we give people tax relief and start to pay down some debt.
You miscalculated the money that you're going to bank from your welfare changes as well. You thought you were going to get $2 billion, you're getting $670 million. Will you have to borrow to pay for your tax cuts?
You'll see all of that in the budget and you'll see our track and our fiscal track.
Problematically, you can't commit to that promise that you've been making right along.
We're going through a budget process, as you well understand, and we need to go through that and make sure that we're getting things that's reflecting the latest set of financial forecasts that we're dealing with.
A couple of yes or no questions, because we're running out of time. Will a minimum wage worker still get what you promised as well?
Yes, we had a...
Yes is good, yep.
And we announced that just recently, right?
Yeah, and GST, you're not going to lift GST this term or next?
No.
Okay, and the winter energy payment, you're not going to touch that this term or next? Okay, and the Best Start payment, could you look at means testing it in the first year?
Again, all of those conversations will happen and you'll see the package that's put together in the budget. What we're determined to do is to make sure we get financial discipline back into the accounts and to the books. That's important. It's been an abysmal set of circumstances that we've inherited. We're working our way through it. We're going to be good economic managers. We're going to make sure we get good culture of financial discipline back into government.
Two more questions. Can I get your view on Ruby Tui and Arahiana Marino Tauhino and their boycott of the Chiefs Manawa, and also the fact that that's seen as a kind of show of solidarity for the Hurricanes Paua, who called your government redneck?
Well, look, I'd just say to you is, we're a government that's going to honour the treaty. It's sacrosanct. It's so important. It's a document we all believe in. It's foundational to New Zealand. There's no change to the treaty. We're also going to make sure we honour all treaty settlements. We have parties that believe in property rights and any future obligations that we have. We want to see more treaty settlements completed. And importantly, frankly, we want to get better outcomes for Māori. And when we look at the last 6 years under a government that had a lot of nice words but actually didn't deliver for Māori on economically, victims of crime, health, education, we're going to do much better.
Cool. And last question, can I just run past you some juxtapositions and decisions that you've made? You're cutting school lunches maybe by half, but giving landlords billions in tax breaks. You cut Tidil incentives for public servants, saying in the real world, outside the bubble of Parliament, people actually pay for it themselves, but you hadn't paid for it yourself. Your Tidil lessons were paid for by the taxpayer. You demand tax cuts across the public service and make police an insulting payoff, and you take that $52,000 living allowance to live in your own apartment. So, just bear with me here. You bemoan the Labor government subsidising wealthy Tesla owners, but your household claimed that same $8,625 clean car subsidy. In fact, you had another Tesla on order on the taxpayer as well, which you cancelled, and you claim $3,750 from the taxpayer a month to pay your electorate office, which you also own. Can you see anything wrong with any of that?
I think you're conflating a whole bunch of issues. What I'd say to you is very clearly, we're a government that's going to focus on what we're doing, which is to actually rebuild this economy, get the cost of inflation down, make sure we grow it again, restore law and order, deliver better health and education.
Nothing iffy in there. That sits with you perfectly fine.
That's what we're focused on. That's what we're going to continue to do.
Okay, Prime Minister, awesome. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay,
cheers.
Bye.
Take care.
I should say that we were being told to urgently wrap that interview by the Prime Minister's press secretary towards the end, which meant we couldn't ask a lot of the questions that we wanted to. And when the interview was over, the Prime Minister walked off very, very quickly. And he walked off still wearing his microphone. Bruce, our video journalist, ran up almost immediately to let the PM know, but not before Christopher Luxon gave this analysis of our interview.
Classic tabloid stuff from Stuff. Good on you.
Classic tabloid stuff from Stuff, Luxon said. The Prime Minister came up to me again after that and said he felt that last question was unfair. I told him he was able to make that point in the interview. That's his value judgment. I'm not drawing any conclusions here. You can draw your own. And you might well agree, I'm sure a lot of you will, with the Prime Minister that I was unfair to conflate those things. Maybe you agree it was tabloid too. Or perhaps you think it's okay to lay out and juxtapose a Prime Minister's record, the person who holds the highest public office in the country. Let me know your thoughts, either which way. Always keen to hear from you, tova@stuff.co.nz. Time now, though, for Snakes and Leaders, our look at the winners and losers of the week with Andrea Barnes, the brilliant National Affairs Editor for The Post and Sunday Star Times. Kia ora, Andrea. How are you?
Hey, Toba. I'm good. How are you? What's cooking?
I'm good. I'm at the Central District Field Days and I'm beaming in from a cinder block motel room, a roadside motel room, so sorry if it's very echoey. That is why. And you're in the throes of a massive story, so without further ado, hit me with... I don't know. Who was your winner of the week in politics? The recess week, so a bit quieter, but still a lot going on.
It feels like there's a lot going on. I guess winners of the week, like it's hard to choose between the construction industry and landlords. They've done pretty well out of politics.
Sure they have.
You know, the fast track consenting and the interest deductibility. I guess, you know, National's doing what it said that it was going to do. Fast-track consenting comes with a lot of issues and a lot of problems, but it will be popular in certain quarters. I think it will be popular with most people until it happens in their backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
And landlords will be delighted by the interest deductibility. I mean, I guess the argument is that it's just restoring a thing that other businesses already have. So I can see the reasons for and against. I think there's going to be a lot more heat on both those issues come. I guess depending on what side of the fence you sit, it is a little hard to kind of reconcile, you know, giving that to landlords and then in the same breath cutting benefits and school lunches and, you know, public service jobs. So, but those are the choices that were voted for. So again, can't really be too harsh on them for that. I guess really connected to that, the loser of the week, I guess is Chris Luxon, because I don't know, he's just making such a mess of it at the moment. Like the 16-point loss in his net favourables is just, I just have never seen such a massive own goal on that scale. I have to say, I know it was only one poll, so we should qualify it with that, but I have to say my jaw dropped when I saw those results, but kind of understandable.
And then been a kind of cacophony of things as well, haven't there? Like the interest deductibility, as you say, as advertised, but getting the numbers so magnificently wrong that even the watered down version is still going to have a cost blowout associated with it that's close to $1 billion.
I just think all of that was easily explained given the current economic climate. They could have polished up those answers much better. And I don't know, maybe our colleague Luke Malpass wrote about it very eloquently last week, but Monday's post cab was a schmozzle. I don't know if the poll really knocked, dented his confidence a little bit, but he made a real arse of it. Like, these things were easily explained away. They weren't a surprise to anyone. We knew they were going to do it. He's had months to get his lines together. David Seymour managed to explain in a much more comprehensive way why the interest deductibility isn't quite what they said they were going to do. So, yeah, I don't know what's wrong with him, but he's really...
Yeah, political radar has been off, hey?
Yeah.
And couple that with the living allowance as well, claiming $52,000 to live in his own home, it just kind of... And then you turning swiftly on it following the public backlash, but just kind of not recognising those things before they become problems, not cutting them off at the pass.
Yeah. Honourable mentions. It's always hard to find honourable in New Zealand politics.
Well, you can hit us with the dishonourable.
Well, I just think it's, I know Luke's going to talk to you a little more about this, but I just, I was surprised to see that Labour's caucus retreat is now. Like, they're a bit late.
It feels like they've been late with everything, showing up to oppose the government or do anything that matter.
It just seems to be another symptom of the idea that they're just entirely checked out. Like, I know it was rough losing the election, but, you know, we're months down the track from that. We really need a decent opposition. Like, there are a lot of things going on. Democracy is being eroded somewhat with this pursuit of urgency and things being rushed through. And I just think, like, a weekend of navel-gazing at this stage in the proceedings is probably not what Labour needs. And also, they could have had these conversations in their normal caucus without drawing attention to them. And it just raises the questions of probably not going to be a leadership challenge to Chris Hipkins, but it certainly re-highlights those divisions. So I don't know. It just seems like a really stupid time to have it.
And add to that the fact that, you know, this urgency stuff is deeply problematic, the pace at which we're pushing through legislation at the moment and the lack of accountability. But the fact that the opposition leader, Labour leader Chris Hipkins, comes out and starts calling Chris Luxon a dictator on News Hub, this is not helping his case when you jump to such kind of extremities.
No.
And also I did a story recently as well, just in terms of kind of, yes, it's bruising to come off the back of an enormous drubbing like Labour did at the last election, but National went through the same in 2020. So far, at the point of writing that story a couple of weeks ago, Labour had put out 8 press releases. National, in that same period after their 2020 drubbing, was 33 press releases. And I know that's not the, you know, all-seeing metric for how effective an opposition is, but it does speak to the amount of work and amount of opposing that an opposition party, a major opposition party, is doing to the government.
Yeah, I mean, they are a measure in a way, because it shows how hungry the MPs are and how much they're paying attention and how much they care. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I just think Labour needs to kick up the arse.
All right. Well, we'll talk to Luke very shortly and we'll get his take on it as well. Perhaps he can extend that kick for you while he's at the Labour Party caucus retreat. Andrea, such a pleasure speaking with you, and all the best with your story. I look forward to reading it.
No worries. Have fun in fielding.
Always. Now it is the Beehive Buzz with Luke Malpass, Stuff's political editor. And Luke, I'm stumbling over my words because I'm so excited. You're at the Labour Party caucus retreat and you're fresh out of the stand-up with Chris Hipkins, the leader of the opposition. I'm aching to hear what's going on down there. What's the vibe check? Is he gonna survive?
Oh yeah, I think so for the moment. Probably for quite an extended amount of time, because no one else is really ready. There's clearly no appetite within the caucus to get rid of him. I think probably there's also a recognition that he got dealt basically a rum hand, you know.
Really?
Jacinda Ardern left, you know, economy wasn't great, inflation was very high. So, you know, he's here and everyone's, you know, sticking to the script and they're talking about in 2.5 years' time, we've got to rebuild and all of these good sort of things. You know, in a way, it creates a bit of stability for Labour, because there isn't anyone who's ready to say, well, it's my turn.
Yeah, and we're just talking to Andrea as well, and she was pointing out that this, you know, the caucus retreat is delayed, so this is something that Labour does every year. It's held out in the stunning, stunning Martinborough, the kind of Labour caucus retreat. And this is perhaps not the best time to be drawing attention to themselves and navel-gazing when they should be doing the job of opposing. Has there been a great deal of soul-searching going on, though, in the wake of that defeat? Or do they feel like they're getting ready to actually do the business at hand, which is do their jobs and oppose the government?
Yeah, I think so. Labour thinks I've got quite a lot to work with. You know, I think they feel that government has done a few things that kind of weren't particularly well telegraphed on, particularly some of the changes around the smoke-free laws and bits and pieces like that. I also think that it does seem to be a reasonably genuine humility.
Yeah.
I think, you know what it's like. Often after elections, if someone's been in for a while, like, oh, we lost because people stopped listening to us, or they just got sick of our faces, or, you know, basically the public's been swindled by, you know, this guy's become prime minister, they'll soon come back to us. There hasn't really been any of that talk. I mean, it is the worst result for Labour being booted out of power. And I think the mood reflects that. And I think, at least at this stage, there is a genuine recognition of the need for and desire to kind of actually go back to the drawing board and work out what kind of, you know, Labour 2026 should look like.
Yeah, they've got a hell of a lot of work to do as well. And then re-looking at all those policies again too, that's going to be massive. So it'll be interesting when they do get to a position where they can start releasing some of those new policies and we get a bit of a...
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that Hipkins said today, he doesn't expect any tax policy, you know, within the next 12 months.
Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think also they're talking about that in terms of how will that fit into an overall economic plan. So I think quite sensibly at the moment, they clearly don't want to just look at tax in isolation and... Because I think there has been a tendency in New Zealand to be like, oh, capital gains tax will fix this or wealth tax will fix that. And I think they're under no illusion that, you know, although they may want to make changes, it has to be part of a far bigger kind of new story that Labor will want to tell New Zealanders and to reflect on over the next little while.
Totally. And their problem isn't just a tax problem, because if that was the case, you know, the Greens would have got their entire share of the vote. It's pissed off some in the base and it's a really contentious issue for them. But I think the issues that Labor's facing after that dropping are far greater. The Prime Minister, Luke, you might have missed it because it was probably happening in the thick of all the stuff happening at Labor, but in his stand-up at Central District Field Days, he's really, and we've heard it a lot in the Parliament as well, he's really like needling Chris Hipkins over this prospect of Kieran McEnulty rising up and becoming the new leader of the Labor Party. It's not going to happen, is it?
No, and
not this term anyway.
Not this term, and McEnulty was very firm on that today. Also, Chris Hipkins said he is prepared to make a bet he'll be leader of the Labor Party longer than Chris Luxon will be in charge of the National Party.
Well, the bets are on. Time will tell which way this will fall. Maybe you or I will have a quiet bet, not live on this podcast. Lukey,
always great speaking to
you. Enjoy the rest of the caucus retreat. I'm always interested to hear from you too. Email tova@stuff.co.nz. And producer Chris, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. How's the mailbag looking like this week?
It's quite good. It's quite good, thank you. It's kind of a light grey and it's got something.
Mail written across the front, bulging with letters.
We had an email about the Prime Minister's entitlement to the $52,000 accommodation supplement first. He was going to claim it, then he changed his mind after public backlash. The sender, who we're going to withhold their name for reasons that will become apparent, finds it, quote, unbelievable that Christopher Luxon is eligible for assistance and she isn't. It's quite a long message, but worth reading in full, I think. She writes, my partner and I both work, but I went on maternity leave last May and received paid parental leave for 6 months. The end of the 6 months of paid leave fell in November. My kids' daycare closed over Christmas, so I couldn't go back to work until school and daycare opened again in February. I applied for an accommodation supplement to get us by, only to find that I didn't qualify. They also said I would not qualify for a job seeker benefit because my partner worked full time. Now, she didn't want a job seeker benefit because she already had a job. She continues, the only thing they could do was give my partner a $64 accommodation supplement. I assume that meant weekly, but he received the payment once and that was it. I was also not receiving
work. $64 once?
Yep, 64.
Oh my God.
I was also not receiving working for families because when I went back to work after an early period of maternity leave, they continued to pay me working for families by mistake. At the end of the year, they calculated that they overpaid me and I owed them $8,000.
Oh my gosh.
This is the key bit, I think. My partner and I both have good jobs. We own our home, but of course have a mortgage, which we struggled to make payments on over the Christmas period. We've had to cancel insurances and cut back on expenses significantly. I've just gone back to work. I haven't been paid yet. We're in arrears for mortgage payments, rates and power. So when I hear that our Prime Minister was going to get a $52,000 accommodation supplement, I am absolutely shocked. When I didn't qualify, I thought to myself, how poor do I have to be to get a bit of support? What I should have been asking was, how rich do I have to be? I'm so disappointed. I know there are far more people in even worse positions than I am. I'm back working now and I know I'll be able to get myself back to a good position with my qualifications and experience, but how many others are out there who can't say the same?
Stuff like this makes me incandescent, because what is the welfare state designed to do? It's designed to help people like this. What is the point of a safety net if the safety net doesn't exist for the people who need it when they need it most? And as she said, like, she's, you know, prescribing the government's views about not going on the job seeker benefit if you don't need to. So she didn't want to go there. But she can't get any additional support to help pay her mortgage. And people this is why we're seeing police queuing up at food banks and people who are, you know, the oft-mentioned and campaigned upon squeezed middle by both the major political parties, not getting the help that they need. It's not good enough. I'm sorry to hear about that. And I'm glad that you're kind of hopefully getting ahead of things again now. But I'm sorry that you were in that position in the first place. It's not right.
Yeah.
We should look into that a little further as well, but why she was only offered a $64 accommodation supplement. So we'll be in touch to get maybe some more details from you as well.
The rest of the feedback on today's pod is about last week's pod, specifically the interview with Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch.
The Mooch.
The Mooch. It's fair to say we had a range of feedback. American expat Andrew described that chat as stellar, writing, "You two have good chemistry, and your conversation with him was kind of revelatory for me. I was too busy to follow the details of his dismissal by Trump when it happened."
It only lasted 11 days. You couldn't set aside 11 tiny days.
"And I had him pegged as just another right-wing pin-headed ideologue. Man, was I wrong. I may lean hard towards the left these days, but there's still some Republican in me, and Anthony's ability to articulate, accurately project, and precisely assess the current chances of Trump winning another term, seen through the lens of Republican bedrock policy principles, gave me great faith in the wisdom of staying close to the centre."
Oh, thank you so much, Andrew. We're always, it's always a good feeling to surprise people and also to kind of offer different perspectives, I think. And Anthony Scaramucci is definitely one of those people, a Republican, he says, a lifelong Republican, though he has worked on and supported Clinton and the Obama campaign, but a very staunch opponent of Donald Trump for all of the reasons he outlined in that interview. So thanks very much for getting in touch. And Chris, you said a range of feedback.
Oh, yes. Andrew's an American in Aotearoa, and Mike has gone the other way. He moved to the US in 1997. He's lived and worked under the last five presidents and now holds citizenship.
And he's listening to our pod over in the States.
Mike said that Scaramucci was a train wreck in the Trump administration, is a known Trump hater, and almost everything he said was incorrect or extremely tainted. And he was particularly annoyed about Scaramucci's claim that Trump is a Russian lackey. Mike sent a list of reasons why Trump was elected in 2016 and why he's currently ahead in the polls. Top of the list, Mike says Trump has the best economic record of the past five presidents. He says Trump will have his vote in November and hopes his running mate will be Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii. Both, Mike says, have shown they are against corruption in DC, both are anti-war, and both care about the average American traits I haven't seen in other candidates.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I agree, and I think I said it in the intro as well, to the Anthony Scaramucci interview, that he is absolutely a well-known Trump hater. I think his record as well has been well-traversed. We were just keen to revisit his predictions and get his take on things. Happy as well to have yours on the pod now as well. I veer away from predictions, especially on US elections, and I still am almost all of the time I make good on bets.
You mean you pay up when you lose?
I always pay up when I lose, I think. Maybe I don't. I don't, because the reason I'm telling the story is that when I met up with Winston Peters once upon a time in London, just before Trump was elected the first time round, I had a bet with him, $500, that Trump wouldn't be elected. And Winston Peters, if you're listening, because I know you are an avid follower of the Tova podcast, I still owe you that $500. Doesn't feel appropriate to give it to you now while you're in office, though. Maybe next election. Just jokes.
You've been listening to Tova, hosted and produced by me, Tova O'Brien. Follow us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts to get the latest episode automatically. And keep an eye on your feed for bonus shortcasts. We dropped one earlier today with David Seymour talking about tax. You can also listen at stuff.co.nz/Tova. Thank you so much to audio editor extraordinaire Connor Scott, senior journalist Aaron Darman, and executive producer Chris Reed. Most of all, thank you for listening. A week is a long time in politics. Anything could happen. It probably will. We got you. Ka kite.
Holding the powerful to account takes time and resources. Show your support and visit stuff.co.nz/contribute. That's stuff.co.nz/contribute.